displayed minority there. After their great leader Moses led them out of Egypt and around in the wilderness for 40 years, they got to the promised land. After the Hebrews occupied the promised land, they eventually decided that they needed a king. And they got what they wanted. They got a lot of kings. Over the next 400 years or so, a long succession of them. In fact, after Solomon, the kingdom, they had some internal disagreements, imagine that, and the kingdom divided in two, and they had even more kings. They had one for both kingdoms. Some of the kings were good. Some were not so good. Some walked in the way of their Lord. Others did evil in the sight of the Lord. Near the end of this period, there was a guy named Manasseh. According to the book of 2 Kings, Manasseh was one of the very bad ones. He encouraged the worship of Baal, dealt with mediums and wizards, shed much innocent blood. Unfortunately, Manasseh ruled for a long time, 51 years. Eventually, his grandson, Josiah, became king, and things got better, well, at least for a while. Let's read about that time. This is from the book of 2 Kings, chapter 22. I begin with verse 1. Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign. He reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jedidah, daughter of Abiah of Bozkath. He did what was evil. He did what was right in the sight of the Lord. He walked in all the ways of his father David. He did not turn aside to the right or to the left. In the 18th year of King Josiah, the king sent Shaphan, son of Azaliah, son of Meshulam, the secretary to the house of the Lord, saying, "Go up to the high priest Hilkiah and have him count the entire sum of the money that has been brought into the house of the Lord, which the keepers of the threshold have collected from the people. Let it be given into the hands of the workers who have the oversight of the house of the Lord. Let them give it to the workers who are in the house of the Lord preparing the house. That is, to the carpenters, builders, masons. Let them use it to buy timber, quarry stone to repair the house. No accounting shall be asked of them for the money that is delivered in their hand, for they deal honestly." The high priest Hilkiah said to Shaphan, the secretary, "I have found the book of the law in the house of the Lord." When Hilkiah gave the book to Shaphan, he read it. Then Shaphan, the secretary, came to the king, reported to the king, "Your servants have emptied out the money that was half found in the house, delivered it to the hands of the workers that have oversight of the house of the Lord." Shaphan the secretary informed the king, "The priest Hilkiah has given me a book." Shaphan then read it aloud to the king. When the king heard the words of the book of the law, he tore his clothes. Then the king commanded the priest Hilkiah, Ahikam, son of Shaphan, Achbor, son of Micaiah, Shaphan the secretary, the king's servant, Asaiah, saying, "Go inquire of the Lord for me, for the people and for all Judah, concerning the words of this book that has been found. For great is the wrath of the Lord that is kindled against us, because our ancestors did not obey the words of this book, do according to all that is written concerning us." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So there was this book that was discovered by one of Josiah's people somewhere down in the basement of the temple during some much-needed renovations. The book of the law in the house of the Lord. Some experts think this long-lost book was essentially what we now know as the book of Deuteronomy. Perhaps it was hidden away at some point during the time of this guy, the evil Manasseh. Perhaps by Hebrews hoping that at some later point it would be rediscovered in the nation saved by a recommitment to its principles. Now, I think if you ask a lot of Jewish rabbis, I don't claim to be an expert on this, but I think if you ask a lot of Jewish rabbis, what's the most important part of the Hebrew scriptures? They would tell you that it would be the Torah, the first five books. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Our text for today is basically the last chapter of the book of Deuteronomy. It's the climax of this critical section of the scriptures. But it's unsatisfactory in some ways. It's not a, and they lived happily ever after, ending. In a sense, it's not much of an ending at all. The overarching purpose of the escape from Egypt and those years wandering in the wilderness, that was to reach the land that the Lord had promised to the Hebrew people, to his chosen people. A promise that went back many centuries, originally made to the aforementioned Abraham. Yet at the end of Deuteronomy, the people were only poised to occupy the promised land. The challenges of how that occupation will go, they're still to come. So, adding to this lack of a sort of satisfying climax is that the great leader, Moses, does not get to enter the promised land. And in fact, most of the original refugees from Egypt, they don't get the answer either, perhaps because they've been, at times, been unfaithful. Moses at least gets to see the promised land. And it's made clear that the new leader, Joshua, has the blessing of both God and Moses. The people need not fear what lies ahead so long as they keep God's ordinances, which Moses has just reiterated. There are a lot of theories about these first five books of the Bible, how they were written. They're often referred to as the books of Moses. A lot of people believe that Moses wrote the books, although he could hardly have written this final chapter since it describes his death. A lot of people believe it was assembled in a very complicated process over many centuries. Whatever their authorship, it's apparent that the Torah, and specifically Deuteronomy, were critically important to the Hebrew people. So we're at this point where the Hebrew people are about to cross over the Jordan River and enter the Promised Land. Moses, who's nearing the end of his life, gives three different speeches during Deuteronomy. I guess you'd call them sermons. In a sense, they were nothing new. The speeches are mostly a review of what's been happening the previous 40 years. Most notably, Moses recites the Ten Commandments in almost exactly the same form that you read them in the more famous version in Exodus. Moses also talks about the many laws that you find in Leviticus. You know, you've heard a bunch of those laws. Some of them you say, oh yeah, that's good, makes good sense. You know, do not move the boundary line of your neighbor's property. Or other laws, you might say, oh, it's a little out of date, no eating pork. Some others that don't seem quite fair, the child born of an illicit union cannot come to the temple. There's others that we might chuckle at. Your cloak must have a tassel on each of its four corners. Be careful with that. The rules, they're kind of odd. And maybe that was part of the point. They helped to sort of differentiate the Hebrew people from others. Make it obvious they were a special group. God's chosen people. A people through whom all the world would be blessed. These talks by Moses repeat a couple of things over and over again. God continually reminds his people that they were slaves in Egypt. And the Lord your God brought you out of Egypt. If you keep the ordinances which God has laid down, you will be blessed. But of course, that includes the corollary. If you don't keep those ordinances, bad things will happen. After this series of sermons, this critical section of the scriptures comes to an end. Let's read how it does come to an end. This is chapter 34 of the book of Deuteronomy. Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo, to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him the whole land, Gilead as far as Dan, all Naphtali, the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, all the land of Judah as far as the western sea, the Negev, and the plain. That is the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees as far as Zoar. The Lord said to him, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your own eyes, but you shall not cross over there. And Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab at the Lord's command. He was buried in the valley in the land of Moab opposite Beth Peor, but no one knows his burial place to this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His sight was unimpaired. His vigor had not faded. The Israelites wept for Moses on the plains of Moab for 30 days. Then the period of mourning for Moses was ended. Joshua, son of Nun, was full of spirit of wisdom, the spirit of wisdom, because Moses had laid his hands on him. And the Israelites obeyed in doing as the Lord had commanded Moses. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Like I said, in a way, it's kind of a funny ending. Maybe not much of an ending at all, but the next book, Joshua, picks up at exactly this point. The Hebrews are poised on the brink. At the dividing point between a past that has been both good and bad, a past chaotic at times, comfortable at others, and a future that holds out the promise of a land flowing with milk and honey, but is occupied by some unfriendly people. Isn't that where we are today? Isn't that where we always are? Isn't that what we call the present? Poised between a past of joys and sorrows, stability and chaos, and a future that is uncertain. This passage, you know, it's not the parable of the Good Samaritan. It's not the Sermon on the Mount. It's not something that you can read and say, oh yeah, that gives me good guidance for how I ought to respond in a particular situation that might come up. It's not that kind of passage. Maybe it hints at something, though. My life has been pretty much blessed. Gone pretty well. But, I mean, there were things that didn't work out the way I hoped. There were times when my shortcomings were a little too apparent. I suspect you have your own uncertainties. They're probably different than mine, but I know you have them. But just like those Hebrews, poised on the banks of the Jordan River so many centuries ago, our past is behind us. The future is unpredictable. We don't know what the future holds. We just know that God in Jesus Christ goes into that future with us. Amen.
Thank you.
Friends, you'll find our statement of faith, the Apostles' Creed.